From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, an investigation of mermaids. Do they exist? And here's what's happening. Well, the chances are that your local or state police departments have photographs of your car in their files. That's right, noting where you were driving on any particular day, even if you never did anything wrong. Using automated scanners, and law enforcement agencies across the country have amassed millions of digital records on the location and movement, apparently, of every vehicle with a license plate. According to the American Civil Liberties Union, they are affixed to the cars, bridges, buildings, and they scan everything. Is that an invasion of your privacy? Let's check in with the expert, Catherine Albrecht, about this. What do you think, Catherine? Is it?
Well, hey, George, you know, this is almost kind of like the NSA thing. The realization you wake up one day and you discover that every single thing you're doing is being tracked by the government. And we kind of see these little cameras go up on poles, or we know that the cops are driving around. But what we don't realize is that those things are now sophisticated automatic license plate recognition computers. They take a picture, they put it in a license plate, and as a result, they've got literally millions of pictures. So the ACLU has a brand new report that just came out. They looked at documents all across the country. They did Freedom of Information Act requests with all these different law enforcement agencies. They found out that the Department of Homeland Security has been providing immense amounts of funding to local police departments to put this infrastructure in place, and as a result, they now have millions of images. So they could, if they chose to, they could say, hey, listen, I want to know where George Norrie's gone in the last 6 months. And even though they don't have that right now, all they have to do is punch in your license number into the computer and voila. You know, some of these people, they got pictures of them getting out of their homes in front of their, you know, getting out of their cars in front of their homes with their kids, got pictures of them, you know, pulling into the grocery store parking lot. It's all mundane things, but when you put it all together, it kind of feels like that NSA spying thing where they're watching us.
Why do they want all this information, Catherine?
Well, you know, one of the examples that the ACLU gives in its report is a case in which millions of documents, millions of license plate records were gathered, and 130 of those millions, 130, not 130 million, just 130, turned out to actually talk about expired licenses or expired registration, which they said was criminal activity. And so they're using that as a justification to go on this dragnet. But as I keep pointing out on the show, the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution very clearly says that the government is not to be rifling around and doing dragnets and collecting information on everybody on the off chance that a few people committed a crime. The way the Fourth Amendment is supposed to work and the way our free democratic society is supposed to work, the government has to identify who it thinks is a criminal, take that to a judge, get a warrant or a subpoena or some kind of judicial oversight that says, okay, that's pretty good evidence. Now you can go and get information on that person. But the technology makes it so easy to just collect these immense amounts of data. The one thing I want to say solution-wise, because I'm always into solutions, I live in the live free or die state of New Hampshire. I love New Hampshire. We are actually cited in the ACLU report as the only state in the country where this is illegal. So as I drive around in New Hampshire and pull into the grocery store and park in front of my house, nobody is legally allowed to watch me in New Hampshire. And I think the other state should look at that and adopt that as a model.
I think you're right, Catherine. Thanks so much. Catherine's website is part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Just a very horrible story out of India. There have been violent protests throughout the day in the Indian state of Bihar after at least 22 children have died, dozens more falling sick after simply eating a tainted-free school meal. That's it. Four police vehicles were set on fire during the protest by parents and hundreds of villagers. A doctor at a local hospital thinks that a chemical used in pesticides likely to be the cause of the contamination. The midday meal scheme provides free food but often suffers poor hygiene. It was introduced to combat hunger and boost school attendance throughout India. It reaches 120 million children in 1.2 million schools across that country. Just a very sad story. The school's cook told the government she thought a new type of cooking oil was the cause of the poisoning as well. I don't know what you can say on that. Corey Monteith, the star of the hit television musical comedy Glee, apparently died from a heroin and alcohol overdose, according to the coroner in British Columbia up there near Vancouver. The 31-year-old Canadian who played Finn Hudson on the show was found dead in a Vancouver hotel room on Saturday. Sad story there. The ship captain accused of causing the deaths of 32 people in last year's Costa Concordia cruise disaster asked for a plea bargain as his trial got underway in Italy. He faces three criminal charges. The disaster, of course, caused the 32 deaths and 150 people injured. Starts of new U.S. homes unexpectedly fell in June to the lowest level in almost a year, indicating a pause in the industry's progress. What happened? Let's check in with Catherine Austin Fitz. This was a letdown, Catherine.
Very simple, George. Interest rates were up. We talked about this the last time. The Fed chairman several weeks ago came out and said the Fed was going to ease off on quantitative easing before the end of the year, sooner than the market expected. And we had something we're now calling taper tantrums with interest rates rising. The part of what's helped housing is the institutional market. We have institutions buying for rental, and they shelved several big REIT IPOs. REITs off about, 5 to 10%. And then the
they got to you, Catherine.
The interest rates got to me.
The Federal Reserve has gotten your voice.
And they're up as well.
All right.
So,
well, look,
hurting housing.
we got the drift here, Catherine. Go take some water, but that's housing starts in June, lowest level in a year. Very disappointing for that industry. That's Catherine Austin Fitz there coughing her way, but still giving us vital information there. In Pennsylvania, when Chris Reynolds opened up his June PayPal email statement, something was very strange. He had a balance of how much? $92 quadrillion. I kid you not. PayPal doesn't have that kind of money to pay him. This would have made him the richest man in the world by far. $92 quadrillion. PayPal made a mistake, and of course they corrected it. I think he's got like 92 cents in there or something. An Australian man is to be charged with disturbing the peace of the dead after police found 56 skulls and another 55 other bones at a museum that he created in his home. That's what he liked. Police said the relics were taken without authorization from a church cemetery and had now been returned peacefully. You know, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, we call it HARP here, subject of fascination for many, many years. It apparently has closed down. Why? Well, we're going to check in with Nick Begich in a moment on Coast to Coast AM and get his take on this for the hour. It's an incredible story. People are accusing HARP of doing all kinds of heinous things, so we'll get Nick's take on this. Hey, I've got an announcement for you. Those of you who haven't had the opportunity yet to get up to the coasttocoastam.com website, let me tell you what has happened today. As you well know, I have been on this program now for at least 10 years, 10 and a half years. It keeps clicking along, goes by faster than I thought, and associated with the program even longer than that, starting in 2001. And, you know, at that time I came in, there were about 440 affiliates, and we've grown it to 573, all-time record high. And our great staff of the people whose names I mention at the end of this program, of course, contribute to putting this great program on, making it the highest rated overnight talk show in the world. And I just want you to know that the network and I have come to an agreement for a brand new long-term contract, something just about unprecedented in broadcasting. I can't reveal every minute detail of this, but I will tell you that I probably will be able to be broadcasting when we send astronauts to Mars. And so we're all very happy about it. None of this would have happened without you. None of this would have happened without the great staff that I have that constantly does just yeoman's work for us every day, every night, holidays, weekends, you name it. It's an incredible team. I'm great and welcome and honored to be associated with all of them. But just wanted you to know the news that stability is important, and we're going to be here on this program for a very, very long time. Anyways, we'll be back in a moment with Nick Begich on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Nick Begich with us. Okay, there's talk that HAARP up there in Alaska has shut down. Nobody knows it better than Nick Begich. Nick, what is going on?
Well, there was a apparently a recent press release came out of the looks like out of Kirtland Air Force Base in New Mexico, and the primary speaker on this issue was Dr. James Keeney, who is apparently the current program manager for HAARP. And it looks like the Air Force has not funded it for this coming fiscal year, something that they said was shut down actually since May, which doesn't really surprise me too much in the sense that it has always been, and many are unaware of this, intermittently operated. It's not operated 24/7 every day of the year. It's operated for generally short campaigns in the summer months. Has pretty much been quiet with HAARP ever since its inception. But looking at the story a little more closely, the way this press release came out, what it says essentially is the Air Force has shut it down, but what it doesn't say, that's very important, is this project was essentially taken over predominantly by DARPA, which is a different agency entirely, back in 2006. And in 2006 was when they quadrupled the size. And that all of that funding actually came out of DARPA, not the Air Force. And there's essentially three branches that have been involved in this over the years. It's been the Air Force Research Lab, the Office of Naval Research, and more recently, since 2006 at least, DARPA. The other thing, just to be clear, is they say it's shut down since May, and at the same time they say, and I'm quoting from the article now, it says... adding that it will stay that way. Everything is in secure mode, he said. That's this program manager. Adding that it will stay that way for at least another 4 to 6 weeks. In the meantime, a new prime contractor will be coming on board to run the government-owned contractor-operated facility. So what it's really saying is the Air Force is not funding it. It's being funded elsewhere, and that private contractors are essentially going to take over this facility. The other thing the article goes on to say is coming this fall and through the winter, there's an $8.8 million program being funded by DARPA where they're going to utilize the instrument. So I think we could really kind of look at this as sort of a furlough, if you will, where it's being shut down for blocks of time where essentially it's not in use, and that saves the military between approximately $300,000 a month, I think, is what it costs to keep that operating. So temporary shutdown, no doubt about it. The permanency of this, the article is clear. It's not a permanent thing. It's just until they can get a private contractor on board to manage it. Now, the important thing about that, private contractors usually are exempt from things like the Freedom of Information Act.
That's right. That's
and
good
so
point.
What they've done is, in my view, the article reads as if everything is going away. We don't even think about it anymore. But the real story is it's going deeper. They're taking it that one level deep where they spin it off from the military directly, spin it off from DARPA, so that they don't have the accountability requirements that they would have as a governmental agency. So none of that really surprises me too much. In fact, I would watch the federal budgets for anything related to ionospheric research, of which HAARP has been a major part of. And I think it was just a couple days ago, at least it was in our, it was a front page lead story, was about the ionospheric disturbances caused by solar flares and the fact that this could create another Carrington event, the event that occurred in 1859.
Right. It wiped out the telegraph system at the time.
Right. And so when you think about something that in the last couple of days has made major news around the world as a big concern of governments, I don't think it's likely they're going to shut down ionospheric research when at the same time they're saying this is a big deal. And actually, if you look at ionospheric research under the federal budget, you'll see this particular issue, the Carrington event kind of scenarios, are becoming, they show up more frequently in the federal budget as an item to pay attention to. The other thing to consider is a lot of the grants that feed research at HAARP are done through academic institutions who are obviously upset with the Air Force story, but again, a private contractor stepping in, expect by fall for that to be in place. That reduces some costs for the government in one sense, and shifts the money in a way where you can bury the project a little bit deeper in the federal budget. I think that's really what's going on, at least in this instance.
You think they want to hide these things a little bit more, Nick?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I think more so now than ever. In fact, it's interesting. There was another story that has come out in the last few days, and I believe it's not true. I think it's false. Was that Snowden had released information on HARP saying it was used for assassinations and massive control of populations, that somehow he had released some documents regarding that. I think that's false. I don't believe that's correct.
I haven't heard that either.
Yeah, and if you do a quick search on the net, you'll see dozens of postings now appearing if you tie HARP and Snowden together. But in looking into it, there was one web source that actually tracked it down. Looks like there's another guy named Snowden, and somehow that just went a little bit viral prematurely. And none of that surprised me. Again, it's kind of get your attention sort of pointed in another direction, and I think that's what part of this is. And to see the Air Force come out and say, yeah, we're not funding it anymore. It's history. We're going to bulldoze it or whatever the story is. But at the same time, they're out there contracting with a private contractor. So really, it's, again, kind of pushing people's attention elsewhere. And really, I think burying it is the deal. You know, over the years, it's gotten increasingly more negative press, more inquiries from other nations that are concerned about it. The European Parliament has been concerned about it. And, of course, now they're asking a whole lot of questions, U.S. government. And for those that don't remember, we were the ones who alerted the European Parliament to this issue. We also alerted the European Parliament to the abandonment of the old anti-ballistics missile treaty a year before that actually made the open press. We provided a lot. I provided over a period of time a great deal of information, none of it classified, all of it in the open literature. But it causes a lot of European parliamentarians to doubt the word of the U.S. government, particularly when they're tapping all of their phones and rummaging through their garbage to try to figure out ways to manipulate their governments. And I think that's the real issue here, is one of hiding the truth once again.
Nick, I thought that HARP was sold to some kind of British consortium.
Well, the actual patents, here's how it goes. It started with Ben Eastland's ideas, and they were part of a company that he established for Atlantic Richfield called Arco Power Technologies, Inc. That later, that company took that subsidiary and sold it to E-Systems, which was one of the most classified organizations in dealing with classified work for security agencies. It's a private company. It then sold the subsidiary, this APTI, over to Raytheon Corporation, which interestingly is one of the biggest defense contractors in the United States and was one of the losing bidders on the original HARP contract. So they ended up getting that technology. And then it went over to, I believe it was British Aerospace, then bought that subsidiary. So, you know, those are the companies that control the intellectual property that built HARP. But HARP is actually owned as an asset by the United States government and then operated by those three U.S. government agencies. So it's one is the inventing side and sort of the side that owns the technology, but the other owns the actual facility in Gokona, Alaska.
Now, Nick, there are other HARP-like systems throughout the planet, right?
That's correct. There's the ISICAT system, which is really where a lot of the interest in HARP kind of began. Some of the ideas that were taking place in Tromsø, Norway, with that facility, which was actually operated by the Max Planck Institute in Germany, that became pretty interesting. But because of its location, a lot of the things that you would want to do with one of these instruments, you can't do around highly densely populated areas because of the interference with communications and the interference with air traffic and so on. So HARP became sort of the brainchild of Eastland. And Eastland, I knew personally up until his death in 2007. He was really a brilliant and a very good guy. I just think he got involved in a project that had he had more information, knowing Bernard, I think he would have taken a much different course. But, you know, it happens, and, you know, you've got the systems now in Canada. You've got this ISICAT system, and then you have a very large transmitter that still operates in Russia.
And all right, hold on, Nick. We're going to take this quick break, come back and talk more with you about HAARP, and also we'll take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Nick Begich with us. One of his books, of course, Angels Don't Play This HAARP, all about HAARP. Nick, you know, are we still trying to piece together why HAARP was even made in the first place?
Well, I think, you know, the military record on it is pretty clear. You know, the idea was to create this very large developmental prototype, which is, you know, remember, a prototype is really kind of a working model in order to determine what you can do in terms of a larger scale device. And it had so many unique properties that the military liked. I mean, already they've spent, since its inception, just directly on this project, not including ancillary research and all of that, $250 million, which, you know, in the big scope of big federal budgets, you know, you can buy a bomber for, you know, three or four times as much. But it's a lot of money to be spent over a long period of time. When you couple that with other ionic research projects, and upper atmospheric research projects, it counts into the billions. So understanding the ionosphere is incredibly important for communications, for maintaining our own as well as disrupting others. And that really was part of that sort of starting point. The other was a missile defense system. And this is where Dr. Eastland's first ideas about this technology really started. And having a global shield, a way to stop intercontinental ballistic missiles, was the original big push. The other was underground scanning. In fact, back in the mid-90s, right after the first Gulf War, you know, the idea of looking for underground facilities and bases and so on was a big deal. And in fact, it was then that the Congress, it was my brother's predecessor, actually, Senator Stevens, had asked that they prove the underground earth-penetrating tomography, which is looking into the ground, applications before they did any other funding. And they actually did that. They proved that they could actually locate oil, gas, minerals, and underground facilities with like 99.9% accuracy. So none of that's really changed. I mean, those are still big issues, important issues for our military. I don't believe the project is going away. In a close read of the military's press release, they even say it themselves.
And Nick, you know, considering the kind of money government just wastes,
right,
you would think they would keep it going if they really needed it. That's what's confusing.
Well, you know, think about it. I mean, at one point they were talking about cutting air traffic controllers. I think we need those too. I mean, it's like everything across the board. When the budget cuts kicked in, where it was sort of across the board, everybody had to suck up a little bit. You know, how did the HAARP program take the hit? Well, they cut the summer program. Well, there is no summer program 90% of the time. If you look back on the historic record since HAARP began, the summer's the dead season. Shutting it down probably made sense years ago, and they never did it because money flowed freely. Well, now the money's constrained, so they're operating a little more fiscally responsibly. When you're not using a facility every summer, it's kind of foolish to keep it open every summer. And HAARP is not you know, some massive employment program. They bring people out for specific campaigns that occur in the fall, winter, and spring months, not in the summer as a general rule. So I really think all they've done is something that maybe they should have done a long time ago.
And Nick, you know, a lot of people think HAARP is being used for weather manipulation, possibly causing earthquakes and other calamities.
Right.
If from now to before it opens up again, if it ever does, if we get major earthquakes and things, what does that do to that argument?
Well, I mean, as far as this particular facility, I think that, you know, obviously not every earthquake is naturally occurring, but most of them are certainly. The rare instances where man creates earthquakes goes back, even back to Secretary of Defense William Cohen in 1997 suggested that even terrorist states had that technology to trigger earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, these kinds of things. In fact, we quoted him in the book Earth Rising from a DOD news briefing saying exactly that. What I would say, you know, regarding weather modification is, remember, this is not the only facility. We have Arecibo, Puerto Rico. We have the Izakat system in Europe. We have a system in Russia. The Chinese have their own system. There are lots of phased arrays now This was just one. A developmental prototype started many years ago. There are many more systems today operating around the world. Even the Sura system in Russia continues to operate today.
Okay, let's go to Steve in Dallas, Texas on the wild card line. Steven, go ahead.
Hello, George. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Begich. First thing I want to say, though, George, you scared me there for a minute. I was listening years and years ago when Art said that he was retiring.
Yes.
And you scared me there at the beginning.
No, I'm going to be around for a long time here, Stephen.
And that is great. Dr. Begich, do you think that any of the arrays are ever used with our allies in conjunction with each other, that they would coordinate an exercise or an experiment?
Absolutely. In fact, the very first planning document, technical memorandum that we uncovered was over 600 pages and spoke to exactly that. By using various arrays from around the world and triangulating the position, you can create a resonance effect that is greater, really, than the sum of its total tapping energy that's in the ionosphere, and perhaps even creating standing waves in the ionosphere. The idea that these would be worked in conjunction with one another was always part of the plan. And because there are so few instruments and really probably 100 experts in the field around the world, they have always collaborated. They have always had joint conferences. The very planning conference that were used for designing HARP was done as an outgrowth of international cooperation. It has always been the case.
Steve, thanks for your call. Next up, we go to Mike in Ajax, Canada on the international line. Hello, Mike. Go ahead.
Good evening, sir. First thing I want to comment on is that apparently Tesla, that was a conversation you had a minute ago, that in 61 he was actually awarded the reversal of the patent office, the award for radio. Anyway, moving on to where we are at now. When Greenland blew up a couple of years ago, the air was full of
toxic things. Yep.
According to Canadian press, Russia offered to turn up their HARP and clear the dust out of the air, and it was declined.
This issue of the Russians offering, I think at one point it was a big fires in Indonesia, and they were willing to create a cyclone to blow that smoke out of Malaysia where it was headed. That was something the Russians offered. The Chinese offered, of course, to clear the air for the Olympics. The idea of weather modification is not new. It goes back again to the work of Bernard Eastland. Just before he passed away, he did work for the University of Pennsylvania and produced a paper suggesting that HARP, at 1,600 times less energy than he originally anticipated, could manipulate gravitational waves, which many believe are the route to major weather systems. So the idea that HARP could be used, the other place he did work was for the European Space Agency, NASA, and FEMA on interdicting and interfering with the flow of tornadoes and tornado formation using HARP instruments. Always has been part of the program. I would suggest it always will be part of the program. And this was the area that Bernard Eastland regretted the most. I mean, when I spoke with him in March of 2007, his issue was he would never give another thing to the military dealing with weather modification because he felt they were irresponsible, and that weather modification was an area we probably should not dabble in. And if we ever did, it would have to be done in the open light of day with the involvement of everyone in the world, because the weather in one place affects the weather every place and is not the domain of one nation.
Do you think HARP is just way too important to keep shut down?
Yeah, I do. I don't think we're going to see it ever shut down. The fact that it's closed for the summer is sort of a normal operation. The only difference is they attached a press release this year, and they're not doing the open house in August for all the school kids that live in the area, which I'm saying facetiously because there's only a few dozen of them in that area. It's like the size of West Virginia, you know, with the population of small-town USA. So it's a pretty remote area.
Let's go to Monica, first-time caller in Los Angeles. Hello, Monica.
Hi, George. How are you? This afternoon?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for the guest, and it's the Will HARP or the people that control HARP one day charge for weather monetarily in the future for like farmers or for whatever? Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. Could people that control HARP one day charge people or farmers a fee?
That's an interesting question.
Here's the problem is when you look at weather modification as a concept, within the treaties that we've signed internationally, we can do whatever we want domestically. When these treaties were entered in the mid-70s, I don't think anyone anticipated anything like HARP. The problem is when you affect weather in one location, you have a tremendous downstream effect that, A, cannot be modeled or accurately predicted. So you may get those farmers the rainfall they need and deny 10 countries the rainfall they need in the process. This is why Dr. Eastland opposed military use. When you go back to the Bush administration, Rumsfeld and his ilk wanted to kill these old environmental treaties because weather modification had become so precision that the idea of manipulating weather or creating a covert war where instead of declaring war and going into a country, now all of a sudden, you know, they have big natural disasters and we get invited in to clean up the mess. And this is, you know, sort of the dark side of the technology. Could it be used for solving weather issues? Perhaps, but it's like a kindergartner with a hand grenade. We're just not mature enough yet in our science to play in that world, especially in a way that's closed to the public scrutiny.
Well, and if you're manipulating weather, Nick, as you pointed out, you might not be able to control it. It could do all kinds of things.
That's exactly right. In fact, the whole approach to HARP in the beginning was to create runaway effects of accelerated electrons in the ionosphere and just watch it and see kind of where it stabilizes again or if it does. And they looked at it and they said it as a plasma lab in the sky. Well, I don't think it's a plasma lab in the sky, and I don't think the artificial manipulation of components of our environment on this scale is a wise approach, especially when even the inventor has to revise his predictions about weather modification 1,600 times lower in terms of energy required to create those effects. That means that essentially even the best mind on the project couldn't anticipate in the beginning all of the things that came as science continued to emerge. And I think we're really the kindergartner with the grenade in this case.
Let's go to Green River, Wyoming. Mike's with us. Good morning, Mike. Go ahead.
Yes, I was watching the Weather Channel, and it's got a show called Hacking the Planet. And on the show, they're talking about being able to turn clouds on and off, making it rain, just like what Dave just said, making it rain here and then not rain here. And they're talking that this will be done in the future, and to me is misleading because I believe with HARP, they've probably been doing it already all this time.
Well, it's not the only weather modification program operating. The Russians, the Chinese, many others have talked about their capabilities. You even go back to cloud seeding during the Vietnam War with silver iodine to create downfalls and torrential rains to try and demoralize the enemy. Weather modification has been a big part of military planning for decades, and by the mid-70s, the Russians became so alarmed. They're the ones who initiated the treaties on environmental manipulation, weather manipulation, tidal waves, and so on. Over 70 countries signed that treaty in the mid-70s because already by that time the technology was advanced enough for people to be willing to sign on, even before they signed on to many of the other nuclear and chemical disarmament treaties.
Let's go to Sharon in Stockdale, Texas. Sharon, welcome to the program.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good, Sharon.
Okay. Listen, I was listening to Ground Zero. It comes on my station before y'all.
Right. That's Monday.
Are you there? Okay.
Uh-huh.
And last night, he was talking about, I just found it interesting with what Nick is saying. He was talking about that SETI picked up a signal, okay? And he played it on the radio. Now, this signal was not directed at Earth. It apparently was going somewhere else, and SETI picked it up. I find this interesting because he's talking about they've turned off HARP. and all of a sudden, here comes this thing, if it's true. And I also, you know, coincidentally, that President Obama, the elder, senior George W. Bush, and Clinton, all three of them were supposed to have been in Africa at the same time, meeting with some dignitary.
Mm-hmm.
We all know through the news that Mandela was still in the hospital, so it wasn't him. What I want to ask your guest, Nick, is that possible that it would keep communications coming from or going by on outside the earth?
I really don't know how to answer that. I just don't have enough information to answer it clearly. I appreciate the question, but I just don't have the information.
Linda Moulton Howe, by the way, is going to do a report on that for us next Thursday when we talk about some of these bursts, gamma bursts, and sound
right.
waves that are being picked up throughout the universe, some of which could be coming from other sources. Who knows? We really
right.
never know. It's amazing stuff, isn't it, Nick?
It is. You know, this is the thing about, a fascinating thing about technology is, you know, it advances so rapidly today. I think every 9 to 10 months it doubles. I mean, that's from the invention of the wheel to where we are at the moment. So just keeping up with it is pretty challenging. And when you consider it, this generation, I mean, our generation is in this unique position of not only watching the world change, but changing it deliberately. You know, not just in terms of our developmental footprint, but now deliberately with technology that are designed to do exactly that, to interact with the Earth in ways that we're at the infancy of. I mean, it doesn't mean that someday these things might not be managed rationally and in a way that benefits man, but we're in the very early stages. And this is where the military planners who really operate on a whole different set of criteria than the rest of the world, they really shouldn't be involved, in my opinion, with the advancement of this kind of science, unless the concepts, not how to build the stuff, not how to engineer it, but the concepts need to be debated by the public, because we really need a chance to act as good stewards. You know, the biggest polluters in the world have been militaries and the wake they leave behind them, and we really need to keep them in a situation of serving the public's interest when it's necessary, but not determining what that public interest ought to look like. And the weather modification programs are a case of the military, or I should say the tail wagging the dog in the case of the public.
Well, I think so, too. Only have about a minute left, Nick. What are you working on these days?
Well, I'm doing quite a bit in the privacy areas. You know, I've been following some of those things. I've also, I did another special recently for the Travel Channel. Is actually going to air tomorrow night on something they call Monumental Mysteries, on the disappearance of my dad. So that just is a story that won't go away either. And I'm getting ready to go out into the bush here in August for a few days, and I'm looking forward to that. But I'm always following these issues. These are important issues, and keeping the public informed on new technology has always been a big part of my work.
All right, you keep in touch with us. You're one of our coast favorites, my friend, Nick Begich. His website, of course, earthpulse.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. He's got a number of books out there, including, of course, as I mentioned, Angels Don't Play This Harp. Up next on Coast to Coast AM, we're going to be talking about mermaids and some other creatures, so don't touch your dial. I'm George Norrie, and we will be right back.